It is Saturday, March 18th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today's rundown, a bit of geek news, DVD and CD-ROM archiving, and the second half of the show, your calls and questions of technology.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Sit back and relax. It's time for GeekSpeak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twits.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during our program are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we'll focus on some geek news and then invite Jim Schurhart from PowerFile to talk about storage solutions using DVD and CDs. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Drew Meyer, Product Manager at Network Appliance. John Tracy, Technical Support Engineer at Surf Control. Miles Elam, Technical Trainer at Surf Control. And Sean's in the air room, but not going to be talking with us. Of course, we also have our guest, Jim Schurhart, who, Jim, you're welcome to join us in the news segment if you'd like. Before we start talking about archiving home solutions, business solutions on DVD and CD-ROM, let's go ahead and do some news. And Miles, you're pointing and focusing at me, so I'm going to focus at you. What's the first news story, man?
Well, some interesting news with regard to Google Mail, also known as Gmail. Some folks had some privacy concerns about it in the past. They had wanted to be able to delete mail because normally you archive it, it's always up there. Well, it turns out that when you say delete permanently, it doesn't actually necessarily delete permanently. The mail may still be around. And in a lawsuit brought by the Federal Trade Commission...
Be around in the interface of the user or be around as in Google keeps it?
Meaning that it's still on their hard drives.
Still on Google's hard drives. So as far as I know, it's gone.
Somewhere on the storage.
Yeah, area. It still exists, what you're saying.
Right. And a lawsuit brought by the Federal Trade Commission basically subpoenaed Google for the deleted messages or the complete contents of a Gmail account, including the deleted messages, as part of a criminal prosecution. So even though he clicked a button that said delete forever, it's still around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, bear in mind that Google is not alone with regard to this. Most ISPs will do regular backups of mail in case anything goes wrong. And who knows how long those backup tapes, you know, will stick around in their archives. But it's still something to keep in mind when you use these free services.
Right, because your personal archive, of course, you can destroy the archiving solution that you've used to keep your files around. But somebody else's, you don't have control over it, and therefore they're going to keep it. And of course, someone like Google is going to keep their content forever. I mean, there's no reason to ever delete it.
Well, imagine that you were getting all the voicemail that you ever sent and received.
Sure.
That when you click, when you press 9 to delete or whatever it happens to be for your phone, imagine if all of those conversations were around in perpetuity. Every message you had ever left for someone was still
around. Maybe just my paranoia, but I feel that way anyway. Yeah, that's interesting. So Google did provide these permanently deleted messages to the subpoena. And is anybody suing Google for breach of an agreement they assume they have because it says delete forever?
I don't know if they've actually delivered yet. The subpoena has been delivered.
Okay.
But I don't know if the actual content has as yet. But I'm not aware that there actually is anything in Google's privacy policy that says that, because there's actually something in Google's privacy policy that does explicitly state that they will be using your emails for search capabilities to give you targeted ads.
Sure.
Which is the whole revenue stream behind Gmail.
Right. Gmail, of course, is Google's free mail product. It's a really good web interface. We've talked about that before. And it also has a lot of storage. So gigabyte, terabyte, whatever the storage cap is, they've never actually said.
It's constantly growing. And it's growing, right. 2.3 gigabytes now, I think.
That's pretty big for email. So, of course, the concern is that maybe they never delete anything, and therefore your information might be living in perpetuity. Okay, I want to go on to the next story. Thank you very much, Miles, for that. Drew, I'll go to you, sir.
Good morning, Lyle. So, fitting in with what we're going to talk about with our guest, Jim, today, we've got a recent article on Yahoo that talks about the launch timing for HD DVD and Blu-ray discs. So there's two formats of upcoming DVD formats where you can put more data on one disc. And it's turning out to be sort of a battle. There's two competing standards, one HD DVD or high-density DVD and one called Blu-ray because they use a blue-colored laser instead of, I guess, the traditional red, I think. I've never really looked at one. You're not supposed to.
Red, yeah.
I couldn't tell you anymore. I looked at it. But anyway, Sony's backing the Blu-ray disc player, and they're going to start making one available in the U.S. in July for about $1,000. And, of course, on the opposite side of the fence, Warner Home Video is going to start selling HD DVD titles on April 18th. So now you can buy a DVD that won't play in a DVD player.
Yay!
Just what we all need.
So this is newsworthy just to kind of denote how bad the situation is, right?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion in the last six months to a year about maybe this won't turn into a debacle or in a big debate between the two giants, each picking each other's standard and pushing it. But it looks like we're going to come down to the wire and products are available, but nobody's standardized.
So what you're basically saying is you go into your local electronics store, you buy a new DVD player, you bring it home. On the way home, you actually swing by Blockbuster and buy a DVD from them or some other store and buy a DVD from them. You go home and that DVD won't work on that player.
That's possible. There'll be big logos and big marketing campaigns about which one's better, but certainly it's like the old beta VHS.
Though the customer might suffer, this will probably, somebody will win in a short term.
Somebody
right? Like
will
within
win.
A year, someone will win.
Yeah, I don't have any predictions on that. And in fact, I think when we get to our guest, we might get some better insight
on that. We'll get a prediction from Jim. All right. Thank you very much, Drew. John, news?
Now on to something completely different. There was a contest at...
What a beautiful segue.
On Mac.
Sorry.
No!
It's...
Let's go.
You know, there's a site on Mac.net who had a competition going. You can go donate money for the prize for this competition to see who would be the first people to get a Windows XP running on one of the new Intel Macintoshes. So two people, Blanca and Narf, I'm presuming it's not the real names, won the prize.
But you never know.
When was the contest started?
I don't have that information.
Oh, so I was curious, how long did it take them to actually do this?
To raise the... Oh, well, they've had since they were able to get a dual core iMac. They do have complete instructions up there. If you go to onmac.net, if you're curious on doing this, if you have a dual-core iMac and you want to run XP on it, you can go up there. They actually have a little file to download, and they have instructions. It's about 90% automated. There is a little work you need to do. You need a working Windows XP machine in order to burn a CD, and you burn information on the CD. You do need a legitimate copy of XP to install on it.
Does it work in a dual-boot fashion?
It works in a dual-boot, and they're talking about a tri-boot. With Linux-based also.
So the point of this, the beauty of a Mac and the beauty of Windows? Is that really what we're saying?
It kind of sounds a lot to me like you're buying a Ferrari and then you're replacing the engine with a
Ford Taurus.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know.
Geos are more reliable than that.
Your Geo was great, Miles. I mean, I can see the reason for it. There's a lot of stuff that only runs on Windows.
Ironically, Windows XP will run a little faster than a lot of the current old generation OS X software, because OS X software isn't optimized for the Intel chip yet.
Can you actually install Photoshop, Windows version of Photoshop on the XP that's running on that box and actually get good performance out of Photoshop? That would be nice.
They don't have any performance benchmarks, but yeah, you can install any XP software to run.
The possibilities are endless.
Well, thank you for that. I'm going to move along to who's got the best next news story?
Miles, lay it on me. I've been waiting all morning to get beaten with this.
Okay, we've talked to listeners about Linux. We talked to them about different distributions that are coming out. One in particular, Ubuntu, which our resident geek here is his
I'm personal
favorite.
I'm a big fan of Ubuntu.
It's my favorite named one.
Yeah. Well, that actually works, too. It's easy to use.
Well, there's a nice, big, fat flaw in it, a security flaw. When you install Ubuntu or its derivatives, for example, Kubuntu, the install program will write in a clear text, world-readable file, the username and password that you put in to install. In other words, one that has sudo access, has access to the full system.
Beautiful.
Just in the file system. Now, the bright side is, how do you fix this flaw? Delete the file var log installer cdeb conf questions.dat.
Okay, so a file that you delete. Got it.
Right. So it's not a remote exploit, stuff like that. But
and I'm sure that the Ubuntu Foundation will patch this right away. In fact, it's probably actually already been done.
Yeah, in Dapper Drake, in the new release that's going to be coming out in a few months, it actually already has been fixed.
But don't drop these security holes like they're news. I mean,
what do you mean?
What piece of software that allows you to store information encryptedly somehow doesn't have some kind of security hole?
Well, except for the fact that this stores information in encrypted format and then happens to keep it in plain text somewhere else on a hard drive.
Sounds like a developer was putting that in there so that they could help themselves when they're trying to work on something, and it stayed in accidentally. I mean, just a bug.
I mean, if you have a multi-user system running Ubuntu, you should definitely deal with this.
Yeah.
If it's just your desktop system, it's probably not as big of a deal.
You know, if you're running, you know, for the four people that are running Ubuntu. Oh, wait, two of them are in the room.
That's me. I have four machines running.
Oh, okay. Well, Drew, I'll talk to you after the show. One more news story. Should we get on with Jim?
Who's got another? Hey, tell me about Mars, John. Is there anything cool going on there, or how about the particle
Mars is the
thing?
Red one.
Mars is being orbited by the largest space telescope ever put in
space. The most powerful machine we've ever put in orbit around Mars.
Yeah, the Mars orbiter
did the biggest telescope ever launched into space. What I've heard.
No.
Yeah.
No, Hubble is bigger.
No, I hear it's bigger than Hubble. It's better than Hubble. It's got better optics.
Better optics, yes. Bigger, no.
And so the project is to map Mars.
Yeah, they're
going to
bring it down to it. It did a successful insertion last week, which is good. Now it's going to do a series of aerobraking maneuvers, which is where it uses the atmosphere to slow itself down. Right now it's got a really elliptical orbit. You know, it's coming in, you know, like 30 times faster than a speeding bullet, and it had to stop and go in orbit around Mars. So now they're going to slow it down, so it goes down to an orbit of about 200 miles.
And that takes months, right?
It'll take some time, yeah. I think December is when they'll actually have it down in its final orbit. And then it'll be able to start taking, the best pictures we've ever taken of another planet other than Earth. So there is currently, I said this 2 weeks ago, Google Mars. Yeah, go to googlemars.com. They've already got, not images from MRO, but they do have images up there, which is kind of funny.
The camera will actually be picking up 1 foot pixels. It'll be taking pictures at one foot. Of meaning that each pixel will represent an old English.
So a Martian laying in the sun should be about 3 pixels.
Okay, good to know. That's how tall they are. They're short. All right, we're gonna. now that we've wasted your time with the weekly geek news, you listen to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. That was Miles, John, and Drew. And now we're gonna get into our topic at hand, which of course is about DVD and CD-R technology. And I've totally lost the promo that I put in here to talk about who Jim is.
Well, Jim, why don't you tell us who you are? Where'd you come from, and why did you start working at Powerfile?
Can I introduce him, please?
Yeah, sure. All right. You got it?
I found it. Jim Sherhart is currently Director of Product Management for Powerfile, the recognized leader in active archiving solutions for permanent storage of digital information. Jim has over 13 years of experience in engineering and product management, including 5 years at Snap Appliance, which is where Drew and Jim met, the worldwide volume leader in network-attached storage servers. And Drew... Drew, thanks for sending through. Jim, the basic premise of the company that you're with right now is to take DVDs and CDRs, which are permanent storage mediums, put them in kind of carousel format so you have large arrays of storage. We're talking like 17 terabytes of storage. And these products, most of the products I've seen on your site are addressed to the business solution. I mean, 17 terabytes is kind of even overkill for me. But you also have some home versions. What's kind of the benefit of going to that instead of like hard drives or tape?
Sure, great question. So CDs and DVDs, because of the technology they use, they actually do phase change technology. So when they record on the optical media, it's permanently etched. So there's no way to change that, I mean, other than obviously destroy the disk itself.
Now, there's some that are rewritable, so that has some kind of magnetic flip that will allow you to reset it all to zero or whatever, right?
Yeah, correct. There's actually three technologies today. So there's the -R plus R, which is the write once media, can never be changed after it's been written. There's RW media. Basically, that works, you know, if you want to make some changes to it, it's going to completely erase the entire disk and then rewrite the whole thing again. And there's a third technology called RAM. That isn't really used that much in the consumer space, but used a little bit more in the enterprise space. And RAM actually is like a hard drive. It does sector by sector. So you can actually go in and change a file or part of a file without having to rewrite the entire
thing. So this is a DVD optical medium that can be reset, so it kind of operates as a hard drive. But it's also a lot slower to rewrite, correct?
Yeah, RAM is RAM's going to be about 8x versus about 16x for DVD.
Sean, our
give me something that's how fast is my hard drive in X? Do you have any idea?
Well, hard drives in theory, I mean, the ones today can go about 150 megabytes per second. A DVD minus R writing at 16x is about 20 megabytes per second,
so
a little bit more.
So it's a fifth of the speed of a hard drive. So it still might be, it's a really good solution for backup. Now, the one-time writes, I mean, for archiving seems, both of them kind of seem to make sense, but the one-time writes, I mean, I use those a lot. I've never even bought a rewritable DVD.
Sure.
Because I kind of feel like the buck that it is for that DVD to rewrite on it is kind of a waste, especially since I might then lose information accidentally that I didn't intend to lose.
Plus the amount of time it takes to reformat the disk and
Print
it again.
Well, no, these don't have to reformat it because they actually can do sector by sector. But so I see a lot of the one-time use makes a lot of sense, especially for archiving. But the problem I have is I've got tons of disks, and knowing where all that is kind of becomes confusing.
Yeah, and that's really the reason for the product that we have, the Carousel, is that a lot of people are just like you. They've got 100 movies, 200 movies. I mean, we've actually had a few guys write in on some blogs that we've contributed to with Media Center, where they've got 600-800 DVDs, and they're looking at our product and saying thank you. Because obviously, you know, you can use products out there and you can rip them onto a hard drive even using like DivX and stuff like that. It's probably not legal in most regards. And a lot of people just don't want to deal with it because the effort involved and then obviously the hard drive space. You know, and unless you're running a really sophisticated NAS server with RAID data protection, you know, you still have it on a hard drive that you could lose that information. A lot of people don't want to risk that.
The company I work for, we use tapes for backup up at UCSC in the arts division. We use just old tapes. I think they're 4 gigabyte tapes.
Uh-huh.
And it takes a lot to store all of the staff and faculty and some student work on those tapes. And it's a lot of swapping in and out. And so that's one of the things that DVDs, I just kind of blew past them because, again, you'd be swapping them in and out because they're the same size as a 4 gig tape. I mean, a DVD. But they are larger, and with 200 carousels, you get that kind of large system. We're not really supposed to be talking about prices because we're not trying to push product. That's not our job as a public station. But I would like to kind of get a feel for, is this even a reasonable thing for like a home user to get something like this?
Yeah, I mean, the hardware itself is relatively inexpensive. Really,
like the size of a microwave oven? Or the cost of a microwave oven, or cost of a refrigerator, or cost of a car?
Refrigerator.
Refrigerator, okay.
Yeah, we've got some OEM relationships.
What does OEM mean?
Oh, sorry, original equipment manufacturers. So
what does it mean?
Actually, Sony, okay. For example, rebrands our product and sells that today into the consumer space as part of their digital living room solution.
Home theater storage.
Yeah, so
put that all in context for me. What problem do I have today and what are they solving?
So, I mean, the problem could be a lot of different problems. You could have a lot of DVDs that and CDs that you just get, you know, tired of fumbling through, so you don't watch the movies. That would be one problem. The other problem is maybe you've got a lot of data on hard drives sitting around on computers in your house, and you know you're not backing it up. And, you know, if you lost that information, obviously, you'd be in you know, a world of hurt. So it kind of can solve both those problems. So it can consolidate the media within your house and also provide you with a way to permanently back up your critical information.
What's this Sony product called?
It's actually got it's like the XLV1. So
really useful, memorable name, huh?
Yeah. Is it really for like the people that are investing a lot in their home theaters?
Yeah. It's for the people who are kind of on the cutting edge, the early adopters going after the connected. You know, they want one. They want one device, basically, where they can control all the media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that
and so they can load. So can in the system, you can load 100 DVDs, off the shelf DVDs that you can then access and play, and then also use some storage for it for writing shows you've recorded and stuff too.
Yep, absolutely. It's got that kind of flexibility. So really, what Sony says is, you know, load up all your CDs.
Okay,
press one button and rip.
Right. Let's talk about the tech behind this. You've got normally two drives in there, so you can be burning one disk while you're loading another fresh one. So you can kind of continually write as much storage as you have
yep.
total. But let's get into the storage techniques you're talking about. Drew just mentioned Blu-ray versus What was the other one?
HD DVD.
So what are you using?
Today we're using regular DVD.
Well, how do you decide what to use? Because you face the same problem as a vendor that we do as a consumer, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the advantages of DVD and CD versus tape is that tape formats change. The applications change, and they only promise reverse compatibility to the previous format.
Reverse compatibility means?
Means that you'll be able to read that data using the newer technology.
So 5 years from now, I want to get that picture of my grandmother.
Right, and if you're using tape, I mean, in the enterprise space at least, you know, they're only going to promise you the last generation, so you're going to have to eventually migrate that data. The great thing about CD and DVD and then the blue laser stuff that's coming out is it's going to be completely reverse compatible. So, for example, you know, we have DVD drives today. They read all the CD formats. Read and write, actually, all the CD formats. When we go to Blu-ray, it's going to be the same thing. They're going to be reverse compatible to all the DVD and CD formats.
Wow.
So if you think about it, I mean, you can have a CD that from 1982 that literally you could put in these devices and be able to read it.
Well, let's talk about the long-term storage. I've heard stories about the early CDs and early DVD. Well, I don't know about the DVDs, but I kind of maybe empower this bad attribute onto DVDs. But the CDs, that the medium kind of was unstable. The actual dye that's on there that gets burned out kind of corrodes over time, or things happen to it. And you get the situation where you can't rely on these discs you burned a long time ago. And I've had problems with discs. Not sure if they're scratches or not. But what's the general concept that you accept regarding the long-term storage of CDs and DVDs? And is there different types of media that work better?
Definitely. We obviously recommend that people buy quality media. You know, the easy thing to do is you walk into Fry's or Circuit City or something and you see something on sale. So you buy the cheapest stuff you can.
I do that.
Yeah, I mean, we're all guilty of that. And really, that's like the worst thing you can do because the quality manufacturers really do use the better dyes and use the better materials.
Do they? Because I mean, you look at the disc, you're like, you know what? I bet this disc is made of the same company as this other disc, and this one has the Hitachi label. Yeah.
Right.
So how do you know really that that's true?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there are some B brands that are great and will work just fine. But in our experience, I mean, we stick with the brand names and had great success with that.
How do you? Which ones do you recommend?
So today, I mean, we actually, you know, it's not so much the manufacturer as much as the media itself. So TDK seems to have very good media consistently.
TDK.
Maxell has good stuff, and even iMation is making some pretty good media. So, and you were mentioning, you know, you didn't know if it was, you know, the CD was failing. You didn't know if it was scratched or if the dye was bad. I think early on there might have been some, they've definitely changed the dye technology, and early on there was probably some CDs and DVDs that...
What if I've got my, you know, kids' pictures and that's my only copy in my archive and I want to make sure I keep them forever? You know, it's just as important to me as a company's financial information.
Absolutely.
So is there like an archiving quality of media?
Yeah, actually, Maxell and TDK both make a product. Maxell's is called their Pro Media, and TDK has a product that has a Duravis coating. And they actually came in and did a demonstration, and it's pretty impressive. I mean, you're going to pay about, instead of paying 50 cents, say, for a DVD, you're going to pay maybe $1.50. But they claim it's about 60 times as scratch resistant. Some of them even claim 100 times.
What, did they ever talk about the dye, like, degrading over time or being sensitive to light being an issue?
Certainly, I mean, you're using light to actually create the...
So don't leave them on the sun.
The data, yeah. So they are sensitive to light to some regards. But, you know, that's not a, you know, I mean, don't leave it on your dashboard. You know, is pretty much the recommendation.
What's your general take? If someone's right now been making copies of stuff for themselves on a DVD and they're buying the cheapest media, how stressed should they be about the quality of the DVD being, lose quality over time and not be readable in 10 years?
You know, I mean, the part of the problem is that optical media hasn't been around all that long. I mean, yeah. CDs, you know, have only been around about 25 years. You know, DVDs have only been around really for about 10 or 12 years. So all of the estimations for the age of the media is all done with accelerated testing. And then, so of course, everybody has an opinion about how valid that testing is. But everything shows that CDs are going to last upwards of 100 years and DVDs are going to last upwards of 50. You know, obviously, there's always going to be exceptions to that. But as a general rule of thumb.
I think if you're archiving some important stuff, you might as well pay that extra buck for a company that's saying it's an archive quality. Drew, do you have a question?
I don't understand how CDs and DVDs work. Like, why does light shining on it make any difference?
Let's answer that right when we get back. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Republic, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You listen to GeekSpeak. Our phone answer and friend, Maggie Cleveland, awaits your call with questions and comments. You can ask us anything. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. We'd love to get questions about CD, DVD, and archiving at home questions. Again, the phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go through our email. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. This program is supported by Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, Miles Elam, John Tracy, Drew Meyer, and of course, our guest, Jim Sherhart. Sorry about that. Please join our conversations. Ask us questions and comments. We're about to talk about how the optical drives actually work. And I think that's pretty much what Drew's question was. So, Jim, take it away.
Well, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know. I don't know to the
You just play
degree.
One every day.
How many lumens does it take to burn through the...
No, that's fine. Give me the layman's version.
DVDs and CDs, for example, use a red laser that has a certain wavelength. And when it's, obviously the media is light sensitive to some regards. And when the laser is focused on there, it actually can flip, quote unquote, flip a bit.
Okay, which is making a little pit in this
exactly
in this reflective
a zero or a one
exactly, and it's just it's almost recording it in similar fashion to how a hard drive works. I mean, it's
or how a record player works. Is it kind of like that? I mean, because not everybody knows exactly how a hard drive works, but it's pretty much the same except for its magnetic toggle instead of an optical.
Exactly, and then once it's magnetic, it's always susceptible to magnetic interference. It can always be erased. Whereas with optical, that can't happen.
So that's the current CD and DVD. But what's up with Blu-ray and HD?
So Blu-ray and HD use a blue laser, obviously. It has a different wavelength. It's a tighter wavelength, and it therefore can pack in more bits, tighter tracks. So the big difference is HD DVD writes very similar to current DVD. So it's writing 0.6 millimeters below the surface. Blu-ray is a little bit different technology. It writes 0.1 millimeters below the surface. So what that allows them to do is actually put more layers in the disc, pack them tighter. So, for example, HD is going to have 15 gigs per layer, and can go to a maximum of 3 layers for a maximum of 45 gigs per disc. A lot of people are sitting here saying that's a ton. But really, that's as far as that technology will go. Whereas with Blu-ray, it's going to start at 25 gigs per layer, and it can go up to 8 layers for 200 gigs per disc.
Wow. See, are you going with the Blu-ray then?
Yeah, we would love, with this format war, we would love to see Blu-ray win. There's a lot of FUD flying about it being, more difficult to make the media and stuff like that. But we've got media, and we're recording with it today. It works.
How pricey is it?
It's going to be pricey when it comes out. I think what you're going to see is similar things to what you saw with DVD. When DVDs first came out, they're very pricey. And obviously, once the consumers grab hold of it and it becomes a standard, it's just going to drive the price of it down.
When the Blu-rays, do you have a question, Sean?
We have a couple of emails. Oh, sorry.
Sean, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that when Blu-ray has Sony support, and it will be in PlayStation 3.
Okay, so it's going pretty hard.
Yeah, you'll see it out there for sure.
It seems to me like Blu-ray has some significant technology advantages. Why is HD alive at all?
Well, HD, Toshiba's obviously got a lot invested in it.
Patents, right?
Yeah. I mean, these guys are all going to make their money on the media. I mean, it's no secret there. I mean, how they're going to make their money on this technology. So of course Toshiba's motivated. They, the technology itself, they're claiming is a not as far of a leap from current DVD. So in other words, it's very similar and that people would be more comfortable with it. But the reality is they're both a big change. Now, one of the things that we're starting to see manufacturers talk about is combo drives, where they're supporting both HD and Blu-ray, and we support that 100%. I think you're going to see something similar. I don't know if you remember, but early in DVD, minus R and plus R were completely different camps.
Right.
And then they basically came out with the combo drive. It supported both, and that became a non-factor.
Nice.
And I think you're going to see something similar happen here.
Early DVD or DVD player that only takes one of them.
Exactly.
And you know it because it's been really frustrating to live. John, we have an email?
We have three emails. Two emails. Two are from the same person. We have Peregrine in Santa Cruz, who has a couple of questions. He wants to know, one, are DVD double-layer rewritable discs coming out anytime soon?
DVD double-layer?
Rewritables.
I don't believe that's going to happen. I think what you're going to see with double-layer is it's going to end with just the plus R, minus R media.
It's a shame. And basically what that means is currently if you take a DVD that comes from a film company or something and they actually got 14 gigs on there, is that right? No, 7 gigs, I can't recall. But it's because of the double-layer disk. But you can't actually burn those yourself, so you only get 4.7 gigs on your home version. And what you're saying is that, yeah, that could get into the home, but in reality, we're just going to go to Blu-ray or HD, and it's going to jump that gap, and we won't
yeah,
see
double
those.
Layer, so single layer will do 4.7 gigs, double layer will do 8.5 gigs. You don't get quite 2x yield because of layers, you know, how they do the technology. But DL is really a technology that was almost like a stopgap. So, okay. I mean, it's always going to be supported, but you're not going to see the technology go any further.
Right. But you're not really losing anything because right now no one has a rewritable dual-layer drive. It's like everyone would, if they did have rewritable dual-layer, you just have to buy a new drive anyway. Now you're just buying a Blu-ray right. or HD that's going to be much higher capacity.
Now, okay, the Blu-ray, I mean, the HD, I'm assuming, uses a red laser, and it's pretty similar, and therefore I'm not really concerned about it. Can the Blu-ray also burn traditional, like, the CDs and DVDs that we currently
Absolutely.
Have?
Absolutely. That's one of the great things about it.
Does it have two lasers in it to do the work?
Yeah, it does. Okay. So it's going to have blue and a red laser, so it'll be reverse compatible, so you'll be able to burn not only DVDs, but CDs. Now, each manufacturer is going to support certain formats, like some may not support DVD RAM. But the drives that we're currently looking at a PowerFile are going to support pretty much every previous format.
So you could also start burning purple.
If it's sorry, higher density.
We have another email. Mike from Los Gatos is asking, what about the special inks being sold for writing directly onto the CD, DVD? I'm presuming he means labeling it on the back as opposed to using a Sharpie.
Is he credit? I remember when Sean was first showing me the first home DVD or CD burner was a 1X, made by the company he was working at the time. He was like, and don't write with a Sharpie, we have special pens, and the pen was like really expensive. I was like, why? I mean, and the idea was that the material inside the Sharpie makes it fluid,
it slightly acidic,
could kind of damage the layer. Is there truth to that?
Well, is it still true? Because I know it used to be more of a foil backing,
right,
almost, that you could peel off with your fingernail if you weren't careful.
I'm going to get in trouble for this, but we use Sharpies at work.
So. There's the answer.
Nice. I get that brings in the HP's got a new thing where they actually burn with the laser and a heat into the, you know, the surface of the disc. Is that right?
Yeah, the light scribe. That's actually really neat technology. What they do is they actually
use... Sean has one of those too.
Oh, does he? Yeah, they're actually really great. We've got a few in the work now. The issue really is from a workability is that you have to flip the disc today.
Right.
You know, so obviously we'd love to see a non-flipping version just because from, you know, it allows it to stay in the carousel and write a label and spit it out all done and ready to be used by the consumer.
The inkjet printers are becoming more common that can print on the back of the discs.
So you just run the disc through the inkjet printer?
After you're done, yeah. There's a little special tray you put in there.
See, I'd want to do it before instead of after.
To make sure the burn works?
Yeah.
We're also finding that you want to print it before to make sure the print looks good.
Right,
before you burn it, because the burning takes the time. The printing's fairly...
And then, of course, the stickers you can stick on. You just want to make sure you center them, because they can kind of wobble.
I don't like those, because they're heavy.
They're heavy, yeah. If it doesn't feel right, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't.
All right, the phone numbers. You can ask us any questions about technology, ask us about what's bothering you, ask us about, you know, your CD making too much noise, whatever you want. Phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go online and do email. People do. Go to geekspeak.org to do so. But if you'd like to join us with your voice... We'd love it. 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. All right. What are you currently doing for home storage solutions, basically archiving your own content? How do you deal with it? Do you have your hard drive backed up?
I actually have a Snap server with RAID protection, so I'm probably over and above most people what they currently have at home. So
you like a terabyte at home or something like that?
I got about a half terabyte, So I got the two drives mirrored inside the server. So.
Yeah, but do you burn all your CDs and DVDs to that, or would you use a carousel if you had one?
Oh, well, I would definitely use a carousel. In fact, I will have a PowerFile in my house in short order.
I'm waiting
for the next generation drives to come out. So,
right. Yeah. So you're looking for a Blu-ray?
Well, actually, the next generation DVD. I'll probably do the DVD because, you know, Blu-rays are going to be a long time before even I'm going to need that kind of density.
Looks like we have a question from one of our out-of-state listeners from Hayden Lake, Idaho. She's asking about the State Historical Society considering changing from microfilm archival storage to optical storage. So I guess, you know, when I was a kid and I went to the library, you'd get this little roll of film and you'd stick it on a microfilm reader and... You'd have to flip through it to find the newspaper.
And later
page.
They became kind of flat sheets.
Yeah.
That did the same thing. Uh huh.
Well, I know that film doesn't last well in heat and light conditions. Is that, Jim, do you think that makes sense?
Yeah, in fact, we got a lot of customers currently doing that. I mean, so, you know, certainly a lot of the government space is still doing microfilm, you know, a lot of the historical archives, and DVD is a perfect media to replace that with, you know, and obviously our products have software on top that makes it much easier to search and retrieve the information.
Is there an automated method for this?
For
taking microfiche or microfilm and putting it onto a DVD?
That I don't know. I mean, I do know there's companies out there that offer that as a service. They'll come in and convert everything. For the customer, I'm sure it's pretty expensive, but I don't know of any specific automated process.
A lot of libraries now use DVD RAM.
Sean Cleveland joined us. Say goodbye, Miles. Thanks for joining us. So, Sean, a lot of companies use what?
They use DVD RAM discs. Those are inside cartridges, and they seem to, you know, not get scratched as easily as other types of DVD media. And I'm kind of concerned about this with archival storage. Will Blu-ray and HD, those will be naked discs?
They'll be naked discs, but you will not be able to buy a Blu-ray without the hard scratch coating. So the Blu-ray discs are going to come with the hard scratch coating.
I think HD, that's what they're worried about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a valid concern. I got to tell you, though, once you, if you can actually get your hands on one, rub it with steel wool, you know, right on the data side with a Sharpie, and you'll be amazed at what happens. Steel wool will not scratch it. The Sharpie will wipe right off, unlike a regular DVD. So it's, yeah. I thought it was.
I want everything I have to be made of that stuff.
I'm a marketing guy, and when they told me about it, I didn't believe it. It literally took me to see it.
So this is Blu-ray.
This is Blu-ray, but you can also get it with DVD as well.
And what is that? Okay. What is that coding called?
What do I look for to buy?
So TDK has it. It's called Duribus, and Maxell has a Pro Media. So either of those are going to have this kind of anti-scratch.
Okay, you were talking about that earlier for the archiving solutions.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And they have those available now for, you know, non-HD DVD.
That's correct.
Just regular DVD. Oh, nice.
And so your software collects this information as it gets put onto these discs and makes it easy to retrieve.
Yeah, it actually as you know. Moving into the enterprise, as anything, you know, it's, I like to use an analogy. What we do is similar to what RAID did to individual disk drives. You know, you don't see anybody in an enterprise storage environment managing individual disks. They've got it all under RAID. They're using volume management on top of that to manage it as large entities. So our software does something very similar with DVDs.
All right. Maybe we'll get more into that. We have some calls, so we'll go ahead and go to that. Diane, welcome. What's your question?
Hi, Lyle. I love your show, and I like the new time slot.
Good.
Hey, thanks. Tell all your friends.
Okay, I'm a graphic designer, and I kind of know just enough to get me in trouble about my computer.
Sweet.
I work on Mac OS X, as Power Mac V4. And my question is that I have a 15-year-old who's always on my computer downloading everything onto my computer, especially music, and lately he's doing LimeWire. And I hear that LimeWire puts kind of SpyBot on your computer. And I run McAfee, but I'm still really worried about getting viruses, although I haven't had any problems at all. So I kind of wanted to know about that, because I heard that Macs are pretty safe, but still.
Good. I'm glad you're being cautious about this. Yeah, before this, we would have said, oh, you know, you're fine. You're on a Mac. But truth is, there will eventually be viruses out for Mac OS X. There have been a few, not really viruses. It's been a worm, a trojan, and a security. Yeah, but it's showing what's going to come. I would recommend having some kind of virus scanner running. Currently, I don't know of anything that's being put on spyware-wise. That's not to say it's not going to happen in the future.
If you were doing this on a Windows machine, your machine would already be infected.
You'd be infested.
Yeah, not so much from the LimeWire software, but from the software that is available to download from LimeWire. Right. A lot of that is just infested with bugs.
You know, a better product for the same type of thing, you know, which is basically stealing music online? No, actually, you're talking about distributed sharing, and basically a lot of people participate in the product, in the sharing network. And the one that's more commonly attributed to cleanliness or something is BitTorrent. I mean, that's what I think what all the geeks are using currently. And it's just a different way of doing distributed. The technology behind it's very cool, and a lot of companies are using it for their distribution.
Another good one is eDonkey.
eDonkey, is that using BitTorrent? Is that using another protocol?
It's using a different protocol.
It's like LimeWire.
Yeah.
It's its own P2P, which is peer-to-peer software.
I don't think that's on a Mac yet.
But I don't know if I would go for eDonkey either.
BitTorrent's become the standard, and LimeWire is an invitation for infection later on.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that's great about BitTorrent that I think is that when we're looking, like when the geeks are looking at how to manage our content that we're sharing all the time, like our archiving of the podcast, you know, our shows on the website, the way that we would do it is if we were hit, so with so much popularity that we wouldn't be able to serve all the content, we'd be doing BitTorrent, because it really is becoming this kind of de facto way to allow people to share very popular content. It really works out of popularity. The more people want the product, the thing you're downloading, the easier it is to download. And it's very convenient for things like new releases of software, things of that nature.
What you need to be worried about is what they're downloading.
Yeah.
Because if it's music, the RAA looks at LimeWire and eDonkey and those clients to, they go after people who are downloading music. So
yeah, we really don't recommend stealing music.
If you don't know what they're downloading, I would be concerned.
Okay. And what do you think is the best virus to buy? The best virus is McAfee, or which is the best one?
For a Windows machine? For a Mac, rather. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I really like Sophos.
I'm sorry, what?
Sophos, or a British-based company. They have really good support for the Macintosh platform. Otherwise, McAfee or Symantec. I'm sorry?
You said S-O-P-H-U-S?
S-O-P-H-O-S.
O-S.
And where would I buy that?
Sophos.com.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much for the call. Bye, Diane.
Bye.
But in any of the large AV.
The big three.
Distributors, yeah.
Symantec, McAfee, and... Trend Micro.
Drew, you're going to kind of answer this question. I think it's a good thing to do. What's the best solutions on a Windows machine for virus protection?
Well, so the market share leaders are Symantec, McAfee, and Trend Micro in that order. But the geeks are all fond of a company called Grisoft, Grisoft, and that's a free download for a Windows user.
And it's Grisoft.com, and it comes up as AVG.
Yeah. So if you're looking for something that's economical, you can do that. If you want something that's got a warranty period and on support, you can get one from the big three.
And Grisoft is free. So go to free.grisoft.com.
Thank you very much for the call, Diane. And to everybody, if you don't have virus protection on your computer, even on a Macintosh, eventually you will regret it.
All right. Microsoft's next operating system release called Vista the word on the street is they're planning to have an integrated antivirus. So you can sign up for the beta test of that if you go search for that on the Microsoft website. But Grisoft is a great choice.
We're going to now go to Tescadero and... Olam, welcome to GeekSpeak. Oh, wait a second. Sorry about that. Olam, hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, I have a question about my CD, DVD drive. Why is it noisy sometimes?
Jim, can you help us out with that at all?
Do you use paper labels?
Paper labels.
Meaning you print on a label printer.
Yeah, I mean, the number one source of noise that we see is that people are using paper labels on the CDs and DVDs as opposed to printing directly on the media. And if those are even slightly off-center, they'll cause a vibration that you'll notice big time.
So are you doing that? Are you sticking your own labels on your discs?
No, I'm not.
Or do you hear the noise when you have a heavily printed disc, a disc that has an image printed on the top of it?
I never really pay attention to that.
Yeah, it's throwing the CD, the motor off balance.
Let's do the car talk thing. Can you make the sound that your drive is making?
Well, it's different. Sometimes it's... quiet. Sometimes it's noisier. And sometimes it's almost ridiculous.
Can you pretend like you're a sound foyer?
Yeah.
Wow.
Your drive might be in trouble, but it's very easy to switch a CD-ROM drive out, and they're very cheap.
Well, are you on a desktop machine?
Yeah, I have a Dell.
What Drew just said is very true.
Yeah, the good point.
Yeah.
So just go down and buy a $30 DVD CD burner and stick in your machine. I mean, it's really that easy.
All right, thank you.
The one thing you want to check is has to do with the ID. You're probably using IDE, ATA IDE, which is a kind of ribbon cable thing that's inside your machine. And it's possible, if your machine is set up confusing or different than most people, that you actually have to set a little dip switch on the back of the CD burner.
Yeah, drives come with the directions.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you just pull the one that you have in there out and kind of look at the back, and it will say S, M, or L. And just copy that with your new drive, and you're done.
Also, if this is a newer machine, of course, you can contact Dell to get a replacement drive.
That's true.
Because a lot of times the Dells have custom bevels.
That's true.
Custom bevels.
Bezels, yeah. Bezels,
sounds so nice. Thank you so much, Alan, for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I would spend a little more and get a name brand drive, only because the support and the documentation is going to be better than the real cheapo drives.
I like that. Okay, Santa Cruz, Todd, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, am I on?
You're on air.
Hi there. I'm Todd, and my hard drive crashed last night, apparently, and it came back on. I think it's running really unsteadily a bit. It's back on right now. I'm trying to copy my files onto a CD. I'm having a hard time doing that. I'm wondering if you can tell me a good way to do it.
You're hanging by a thread there, Todd.
Yes, exactly.
I personally wouldn't try to burn to CDs. How much data are we talking about?
a lot. It's a bunch of files and a lot of pictures and quite a bit of music too. But I've only gotten the files. I'm using something called Rocks.io.
Oh yeah, yeah. Rocks, the burner. Yeah, sure.
And now I did it last night, and I think it may have worked. Although I can't bring it up on my computer now when I try them.
Is this a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Okay, I would do is first off you need a new hard drive.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So turn off your machine. And
don't run the machine.
Don't run the machine at all.
Okay.
Because you want to conserve the amount of time, the amount of power and life of that drive. Okay. Buy a new hard drive. Read the instructions on putting it in as your second drive. Remove your first drive, right.
Put in the new drive, install Windows, and then you'll want to add your second drive, and then just read from it.
Oh, okay. So I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that way, special software to do that.
No,
you won't need any. Windows will be able to do all that for you. And what you'll do is just copy from that second hard drive over to your new hard drive.
The one confusing aspect of this is that it's going to go through kind of a wizard to do all this, and you don't really. The most important thing at this point is to get those photos off your drive.
Yeah.
And your drive is going to fail, and it's just a matter of time. One thing you can do is add more air, more cooling to that drive. So when you open your case and everything, look at where the airflow is. If you have another fan, kind of aim it at that drive while you're running. You might get months more of drive time on that drive, but don't do that. But it's a good way to make the drive up as long as possible.
So just keep it as cool as possible.
Yeah, keep it as cool as possible.
Another option, I mean, rather than trying to pinch pennies, would be get an external drive. I mean, something you can hook up really quick.
Right now.
And just like one touch, copy that stuff over.
You know, another great thing to do then is just contact a friend that has an external drive with some space, right?
Yeah.
Have them come over, boot up your machine, copy as much photos as you can, and then if you've got all your photos and most of the files you want, you're like, you can breathe easier, and then you can start dealing with getting a new drive.
Yeah,
and replace
I do have that option. So that's
I recommend that.
And always back up your data.
Yeah. This is an advertisement for DVD archive, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much for the call.
You know,
but as far as backing up data goes, do you guys have a recommended thing, software to use?
Actually, Roxio is pretty good, narrow. I mean, you know, just for regular burning. Is that what you're talking about? I mean,
yeah.
There's even some nice backup packages you can get for desktops. I mean, I know that
Yosemite and
Dance. Dance Retrospect's a nice one.
From Retrospect, yeah.
I mean, you can pay about, I think, $50 and get a really nice automatic backup package so you can just set it up and have it just back up automatically.
External drives come with the software, too. Seagate has a one-button solution.
Okay, yeah.
Seriously, a button on the external drive that you push and it, you know,
that's it.
The software kicks in and does everything for you.
Gotcha.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go through a little home.
You know, Lyle, I helped a friend out recently with his computer and neighbor, and I popped up the machine and it was just full of dust. I've never seen so much dust inside a computer. And he was told to add fans to his computer to keep it cooler, except he made all his fans blow into the case. And what that did is it pulled all the dust and cat hair and everything into the case, which coated all of the components with, you know, dirt, and then those components overheated, and that's why his computer was failing. So if you're going to add fans to your machine, always have the front of the case. The fan should be blowing into the case, and then the fan should be pointing or blowing out of the case on the back of the case. So airflow goes through the case.
So did you compliment him on his new design for a vacuum cleaner?
Wow. Yeah, he pretty much ruined his video card because the fan on the card was coated with so much gunk that it wasn't working, and he burned out his chip. So got to be careful about that.
All right, good recommendation. Another recommendation I wanted to kind of do for everybody, we should do this more regularly probably. Imagine what's on your computer right now, and imagine your computer doesn't exist anymore. Are you sad? Are you bummed? Because that's what happens whenever a hard drive fails, and they do fail. They fail all the time. The hard drive, it's not if it's going to fail, it's when it's going to fail. So it's Saturday. Maybe you don't have anything to do. Maybe tomorrow you don't have anything to do during a little bit of the day. Get a backup solution for your content.
But even backup solutions,
regularly.
Keep in mind that an external hard drive is not meant to be carried around.
Yes.
Because, you know, you drop that drive once and it's dead, and there's your backup.
It'd be nice if there was, like, kind of cheap, portable, permanent storage that, you know, you could use in your home, burn thing, right?
Something like a DVD or a CD-ROM.
You know, that's actually
what we're talking about today
well
is very important.
The emails we have.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead and do the email.
Jude, since this is addressed to you, do you have it? This was Judy from Idaho.
Oh, we got that one.
Wrote back and said,
oh no.
What we know, paper lasts for centuries. Microfilm has a history of maybe 75 years. Optical CDs have a history of less than 10 years. Blu-ray has only been around for a year or two. So if the Magna Carta was on Blu-ray, do you think it would still be around in 1,000 years? It's a good question.
Gee.
What do we think the long-term archive possibility for Blu-ray is?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Do you know this person from Idaho?
I might. Thanks, Mom.
I can't speculate about Blu-ray, but there's been a lot of accelerated age testing and studies done by the big manufacturers. In fact, we put out a rebuttal piece. So if you actually go to our website, powerfile.com, you'll be able to find a rebuttal piece to a PC World magazine, an article, and it talks about the kind of regression testing and stuff that they're doing for the accelerated. They accelerate the temperature. They fluctuate the humidity, those kind of things to try and figure out the life. So, I think.
But they don't actually disturb the time continuum in any way.
Welcome to the fourth dimension.
Paper lasts centuries, but how much was lost at Alexandria?
That's true.
When it was burned to the ground.
I think what you should do with any of your content, just email it to your Gmail account, and Google will keep it forever, so we said. Even if you don't want them to.
That's a legitimate answer.
It'll always be somewhere.
As long as you don't mind Google being able to share it.
Yeah. All right, Santa Cruz, Bob, welcome to Geek Speak. Did I surprise you, Bob? Sorry about that. What's your question?
Well, in regards to enterprise content management strategies, there are various distributed capture techniques, and wanted to get your feedback on what you know about what there is now.
Are you talking about document imaging?
And content management more precisely, because what a document is of course changing,
right?
As we digitize and packetize, but at some XML is of course becoming an important.
Right. If the Magna Carta was a digital file, and how would we actually know where it was, kind of thing?
Your sense of what's happening on a content management level with the technologies that are present now. I know you're talking about storage, of course, with redundancy, off-site becomes very plausible.
Yeah.
For an enterprise. So I just wanted to get your feedback on those issues, particularly on an enterprise level.
Yeah, I know a lot of companies use Oracle for that sort of thing.
Okay, you work for storage companies.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
This whole thing is called Information Lifecycle Management, ILM, and it's been a buzzword for the last few years, and a lot of companies have thrown a lot of money and time at developing and delivering software that will actually do this for you so that you don't have to worry about where it is. It'll just tell you where it is, and you can migrate it around from expensive fast storage over time to slow archive storage and put it off site somewhere, but you still know where it is.
It's so important in enterprise that it's permeated into the consumer market, and that's why you see OS X having that spotlight thing, and Vista supposedly is going to have a whole
That's why search technology is such a big deal. That's why Google's got their free software for Picasa for getting your photos all organized. I mean, it's a real problem because the cost of storing stuff has just vanished.
Yeah, and he brings up another good point about formats, because a lot of the formats people don't realize, like .doc for Word, I mean, that's tied to that application. So what a lot of people are doing is there's applications out there that will store in .txt files, TIFF images, XML is becoming the new big standard. So definitely look for a package that does it in something like that so you're not tied to the application.
So the enterprise level, basically, you try to find a vendor that's credible and you buy their product and you hope that their product will succeed, and you think about the idea that none of your content should be tied to one vendor. It should be something that anybody can open, and therefore leads to open source kind of concepts.
Well, those two, what you just stated, no one's been successfully able to figure out to date. So if it's important, know where it is. If it's not important, don't be afraid to delete it or lose it.
It's a really tough question. Thank you so much for the call, Bob. All right, we're going to go ahead and take one more question, I think we'll just go to Santa Cruz with Bob. No, is that true? Another Bob? No, Steve, I'm sorry. Steve, welcome.
Hello, Steve. How you doing?
Hi, welcome.
I'll make this really quick. First of all, I don't know if you knew this or not, but my technical field is that accelerated testing. So if anytime
that's
you want
right.
to
Steve,
give me a call.
Steve, thank you for calling in. We actually know each other. I've known you all my life. I'd like to talk to you about accelerated testing.
Okay, well, you know how to reach me.
Now,
the thing I'm really calling in about is this, and I'll make this fast. No, we're almost out of time. I called a few weeks ago about and asked if it would be a good idea to speed up my Mac Mini if I got an external FireWire drive like this Mini Stack, and everybody agreed it would. Well, I just want to let you know the results. The results are, yes, it speeded it up incredibly. I used the newer Mini Stack hard drive, which is an external FireWire drive with the Mini, as the startup drive, and it really speeded up startup, application starting, everything. It was a real. So anybody's got a Mini out there that's a little bit disappointed like I was that it seemed to run slow, that's the hard drive that's in there is like a laptop hard drive and runs slow. An external FireWire drive makes it run fast. So I use that as my startup drive, and I use the internal drive as my backup.
What's the name of the product?
It's called, it's newer technologies. It's called a Mini Stack, and it's the same form factor as the Minis.
And who, mini. How can you find it?
OWC, Otherworld Technology, is their Otherworld Computing is their distributor.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank you very much, Steve, for the feedback.
Yeah, thanks for the feedback. It's nice to know that our suggestions. One real important caveat.
I'll give you real quick, though, and that's you have to look at. It's got an automatic startup feature on that hard drive, which if it does, it starts it up after you've gone into boot. So you've got to actually manually turn the hard drive off and then turn it back on again externally to make it be the the startup drive. But other than that, it's a great product.
Thank you very much, Steve, for the call.
Hey, we'll see
you. I was thinking outside the box.
Oh, brother. Don't be so square, Sean.
Thank you for joining Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, John Tracy, Drew Meyer, Miles Elam in the first half, Sean Cleveland in the second half. Answering the phones today was Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating. Of course, our guest, I'm totally messing up. I wanted to read your... There it is. Jim Shuhart is currently Director of Product Management for Powerfly. Jim, thank you very much for joining us today on Geek Speak. Next week,
Sam Feng from Infrant Technologies. If you're interested in how to manage your home storage, tune in 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, Saturday. Sorry, 10 o'clock a.m. on Saturday morning next week. How to deal with all the content you have.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KPDH San Arto, on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell.